The people who maintain our streets are always looking for ways to make them work more efficiently, and sometimes the public will quibble with what efficiently means. In Ashland, the city faced some issues with a wide stretch of North Main Street, which is also Oregon 99, and the city's answer is the road diet. Four lanes for traffic became two, one each way, plus a center turn lane, plus wider bicycle lanes. Now, after nearly a year in use, the city is taking input on the road diet to see if it will continue to use that road diet. We have two guests in the studio with us. Mike Fought is the Ashland Public Works Director. Mike, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
And Kim Parducci is here as well. She's the owner of Southern Oregon Transportation Engineering, which has been working under contract with the city to work on the road diet. Kim, welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So road diets are obviously a solution to a problem. Mike, what was the problem or set of problems that was identified in the first place?
Yeah, the issues surrounding the North Main have been evaluated since 2009. And the first time a road diet, the conception of a road diet came up was in 2009 in terms of how to make that corridor safer. And some of the issues really, as we looked at our transportation plan update, surrounded the one is multimodal, lack of bicycle and pedestrian accessibility there. And then also the accident rate that we had on North Main because of the four lanes and the multiple left-turn conflicts on that road. Left-turn conflicts meaning several driveways along that corridor that created left-turn conflicts. So the road diet is a one way to do that, take the existing real estate and reconfigure that from four lanes to three lanes, as you described, one lane in each direction and a center turn lane. Another option we looked at is you could widen that street and make it a five-lane and create bike lanes and also a center turn lane. And certainly as we looked at that option, we really didn't think that would meet the small-town objectives we have in Ashland, having a five-lane configuration. So we decided to recommend to the City Council they try a pilot project with the road diet, and that started on October the 20th.
October 20th of last year.
2012, yes.
Went into effect. Mm-hmm. All right. Kim Parducci, you might know a little more about the history of road diets themselves. I mean, do you know who the originator was and where they were first tried? And
Jennifer Rossells wrote a book, the Road Diet book, in the early 1990s. And they did some studies which basically started this research on road diets, and then it was put into a book. And since that time, they've been then doing pilot projects all over the state of Oregon, all over the nation. So Oregon is just now really getting up to speed on that. They're doing a lot of road diets now. They're looking at ones in Portland. They're all over Washington, and they're across the country.
It does seem like it's certainly grown in discussion. I know since Ashland put its in, I know that Medford has been talking about one for East Main Street. There have been discussions of road diets for some streets in Eugene as well. So it seems like it's certainly in vogue at the moment.
Right. They're looking at one also on Pine Street in Center Point. There's a new one in Coos Bay. They're looking at them in Bend.
So all over the place.
Right. Actually, Portland as well.
So all over the place. Mike, you mentioned that there were some accidents given the old configuration of North Main Street. We're talking the stretch from downtown, just north of the Ashland Plaza, as far as the railroad bridge, right?
Yeah, the road diet starts from Hellman and goes to the railroad trestle.
Okay.
And so the types of accidents that we were seeing, and I may let Kim talk a little bit more about the specific numbers, but the types of accidents were rear-end accidents, left-turn accidents when people stop. Somebody's going to stop and make a left-hand turn, somebody changes lanes, and a T-bone or a glancing accident. We also saw heavy accidents at the Hersey-Weimer intersection, which since that time we've fixed that intersection.
That was two streets that met the main street, but not directly aligned.
Right,
with one another.
They were aligned correctly, and that realignment certainly has helped that traffic flow and reduce accidents there as well. So.
All right. So Kim, the accidents, though, I mean, the left turns seem like a fairly illogical one, that people are just tooling along thinking they're in the fast lane, and then somebody makes a left turn
right
from that lane, and then all of a sudden the person behind them is upon them. Were there also some issues with people trying to avoid left turners or right turners, for that matter? In other words, people swerving?
Yeah, side swipes.
Mm-hmm.
Right, there were. And what happens when you have two lanes in one direction is you also get blind spots. So pulling off a side street, sometimes you would think that there's a clear gap and you'd pull out and then you'd basically get rear-ended by a car because you didn't see the car in the other lane adjacent because they were blind. So that happens too.
There are other parts of town in Ashland where you've got medians or one-way streets, certainly with other parts of 99 in particular. And I can't imagine the accident rates would be comparable there, or are they?
You know, I don't know that.
We're not seeing the same kinds of accidents there. We have meetings already in place. So Siskiyou Boulevard, for example, there's a meeting in place. There are bike lanes in place. That's really in civic turn lanes for people to get out of harm's way when they're making left-hand turns. So you don't see all the access, as many access driveways as you see in the North Main corridor there. So.
All right. So this really is just an older section of road, isn't it?
Well, it's not just that. It's also residential. It's more residential in nature than some of the other roads. And because of that, because you have so many driveways and intersections that are close, that it creates more, again, as I said earlier, left-hand turn conflicts.
Was greater safety for people on bicycles at all a consideration in the adoption of the road diet, or was that sort of a secondary thing that came after you considered the needs of the motor vehicle traffic?
Yeah, I really appreciate that question. And there's a lot of perception that this was strictly for allowing bicycles, and it was really for all modes of transportation. And clearly, we looked first at the automobile side of it, but it does provide. Prior to this, there were no bike lanes on North Main, so you would have to take a lane or ride in one of the four lanes, and so there wasn't a lot of bike traffic there at that time. And Kim can share with you the differences in September because we measured bike traffic in September 2012 versus bike traffic in September of 2013. So we have seen increases in bicycle traffic there. We're actually pleased, to start. In one case, we've seen a father and a son riding a bicycle down North Main, which we don't believe would have happened before the road diet. So.
It was a little scarier, I must admit, on a bicycle. We'll have to come back from a break and talk about more about the Ashland road diet, road diets generally, and your thoughts about them. Mike Fott and Kim Parducci, our guests, will come back with them, and you can join the conversation at our phone numbers. We'll provide those again after a break. Back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 15. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Our topic today is the road diet. This is the process of taking a four-lane road and turning it into a road with two traffic lanes and a center turn lane and wider bicycle lanes. It's been used in a number of places, has been in use in the city of Ashland for nearly a year now along North Main Street, and we're talking to the people who helped put that in. Mike Fott is the Ashland Public Works Director. Kim Parducci is the owner of Southern Oregon Transportation Engineering, and you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Your thoughts, perhaps you've been driving on a road diet. Maybe you think the road diet's a great idea for a stretch of roadway near you. Give us your thoughts on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. And by email, jx@jeffnet.org. And we were talking about bicycles and the bike lanes in particular before we hit the break. And Mike, you were making it clear this was not just for bicycles.
That's correct, yeah. And just to reiterate quickly, it was really about vehicular safety and, again, multimodal and bicycle safety along with pedestrian safety. And part of the theory, if you will, even though sidewalks already existed on North Main, is that when you have that traffic right next to the pedestrian, they're not as likely to want to walk on the sidewalk. And so what we'll be measuring is if we've seen an increase in pedestrian and bicycle use as part of our evaluation criteria, as well as a reduction of accidents. In fact, if you don't mind, I'd just like to read the list of criteria that the council is going to be looking at on December the 3rd when
sure.
they decide whether or not to keep the road diet.
Six criteria altogether.
Yeah,
right?
So first is improve safety or reduce the annual average number and severity of crashes. Second one's reduce vehicle speeds, the 85th percentile of speed. That section from Hellman to the hospital's 25. It goes up to 35 as you hit the trestle, then 45 as you travel back through town. And so we want to make sure that those speeds are closer to the speed limit. They're actually higher under the four-lane configuration. We also want to see an increase in, as I mentioned, one criteria is the bicycle and pedestrian volumes. We want to see those increase. And then the acceptable vehicle travel time, how long does it take you to go through the corridor? There was a lot of concern when we first talked about this project as to whether or not it would slow the traffic down and not allow folks to get through the corridor. And Kim will be able to share some of the results, but essentially it's It's only takes 2 minutes longer than it did before the road diet with a four-lane configuration.
From one end to the other?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the primary reason we're here today is that the last component is gaining community support, and that's why you see the large sign as you come into Ashland asking for people to offer their input at Open City Hall on the road diet. We're also working with the SOU. We're going to have a survey, send a survey out to 1,000 customers and get their feedback on the road diet.
You know, I did get a chance to read some of the comments because they're right out there for anybody to see, not with names attached, at Open City Hall. And it does seem like there's not a lot of middle ground, Kim Parducci, with road diet, that people tend to feel very strongly about it, either pro or anti.
They do. I've been monitoring the same website you're talking about, the Open Forum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have. I've been looking at all those posts. I think you're exactly right. They either love it or they hate it. It's one or the other.
And has that been the experience in other places where road diets have been used? Do you have much research on that?
Well, it's kind of odd because what I typically find is a lot of people, they'll take it or leave it. There's that middle ground, too, where people will kind of say, well, you know, I don't mind the road diet, but I don't know that it's doing all the things that you wanted. I get this comment a lot when I talk to people about, well, I don't see that there's a lot more bicyclists, but I don't have any problem with the road diet. That's a typical response that I hear when I ask.
Uh-huh,
when
I'm
I talk
sure.
to people, I say, what do you think about the road diet? Because I want feedback. And that's what I hear a lot.
Well, I come to think of it, I guess the people who would be moved to comment on something like Open City Hall, the people who would feel strong, the rest of the folks are like, yeah, you know, take it or leave it. You know, this doesn't really rise to the level of putting something onto Open City Hall or a letter to the editor or something like that. Let's find out what some of our listeners think. Let's go to Patrick in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Kim Parducci and Mike Fought. We're talking road diet.
Good morning, Jeffrey. This is indirectly related to this concept of how about a vehicle diet? You know, I think most of the long transport could be put back on rail where I think it ought to be, and, you know, get the semis, a lot more of the semis off, and you get these vehicles. I was just shopping around for a Subaru, and I was looking at the dry weight. It's 4,400 pounds. And 90%, I used to count the cars and all through Ashland when I was taking the bus, 90% of us are all driving with one person per vehicle, and most of our lifestyle is within a 50-mile radius. So you could theoretically, with technology, I believe, drop the weight, maybe even 90%, you know, drive around in 400-pound vehicles. I know we have the technology to do this, and I'm not talking about all vehicles, obviously, but I just think a vehicle diet is more of a sustainable paradigm. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Patrick. Appreciate it. So rather than a road diet, a vehicle diet, this is obviously beyond the purview usually of what you're able to do as a public works director, Mike Fought, but it seems like when you get into transportation planning, lots of ideas like this come to the surface.
Yeah, a couple of things. First, I totally agree with the citizens' comment about rail, and ODOT is working on, through a Tiger grant, trying to get our rail open again. So first of all, there are folks working on it.
Trying to get the freight line over the Siskiyou's open.
Line, yeah. Mm-hmm. Equally, I do agree, you know, our transportation master plan, while this is one recommendation for one stretch of the road, also offers up recommendations for increased transit in certainly shared rides and working with employers to try to get them to encourage biking to work and or commuting. So I think you are correct, and those are much harder, more difficult to implement. It really has to come from the support of the folks that are going to be doing that. But quite frankly, when you build the facilities, it certainly encourages that. So,
Kim Parducci, it seems like one of the issues you run into with implementing a road diet is that you're changing a stretch of road that existed in a different way before. It seems like when you open a new road up for the first time, and it's always that way, people tend to use it one way. But here you're talking about actually changing the patterns that people got used to. And it seems like probably the initial month or three, I'm thinking, was probably quite a break-in period for people who use the road diet.
Yeah, it was. And there was a lot of, I don't know what you want to call it, hype the first few months. People were really adjusting to it. They were getting adjusted to being behind that one lone driver who was driving 25 all the way through town or 20 all the way through town. And I think that there was a definite adjustment for drivers.
Which is an issue, of course. If you're traveling in a single lane, you don't get a chance to move into the other lane because there is no other lane to pass them. And, of course, you're breaking the law, I guess, if you use the center turn lane as a passing lane.
Right. You are. And I've actually seen that.
Really?
I have. When I've been out counting, I've seen people go in the center lane and pass.
So what is the actual work that takes place to prep for the road, Diane? I mean, what had to go out there on the streets? Mike Fought, I guess it's more your department.
Well, it was really, in this case, it was a pretty simple process. We had to remove the paint and then restripe it. So that's what was so appealing about a pilot project is we're going to try it with painting, and if the city council decides to keep it, then we'll look at more permanent fixtures at that point. So the cost equally were all paid for through a ODOT bike and ped grant. The city's invested about $30,000 in towards this pilot project. So,
curious then, I mean, if you end up undoing the road diet, if you go back to the configuration of North Main Street as it was before, do you have to pay back the grant to ODOT?
Yeah, well, no. It was clear that it was a pilot, mm-hmm. and so we won't have to pay back the grant. And certainly, as we looked at it, the potential was great in terms of reducing accidents and increasing bike and ped, and that's why we got the grant in the first place. But the state will then come back in through the same process. We have to remove the paint that's down and restripe it to four lanes.
So either for Mike or Kim, how much discussion and analysis went into figuring out what exactly should be the north and south boundaries of the road diet? Figuring out that zone, was that always a done deal, or did it take some finagling?
Well, Kim we hired specifically to monitor the road diet. Consultant we had on at the time with the transportation system plan was Kittleson Associates that actually put the design together. And it took some transportation engineering work, it really wasn't that difficult to decide where the breakpoints should be in terms of a transition from each side. So.
Let us take another call. We have Julie in Ashland on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking the Ashland Road Diet with Mike Fought, the Public Works Director, and Kim Parducci from Southern Oregon Transportation Engineering.
Hi, thank you. My first reaction to it all was that I felt very controlled by it, and I thought that the only reason it was out there was for bike lanes. So this is giving me more information as to the study that went into it, which I do appreciate. But it's also created another law for us to break in that there's no room to pass if you really need to, or, if there's an emergency, or, or if you're just in a hurry to get where you're going, you can't get around the slower traffic. And, there may have been a lot of accidents, and, a lot of people were confused about turning left. Someone might turn left right in front of them. But I'm thinking that could be handled with signs and paint on the pavement and still give those of us who want to move more freely. Because this seems like, there could be a roadblock put up and you would get arrested if you tried to go around it. And it just seems like another imposition of another way of controlling in our society, and it concerns me.
Julie, let me ask a question back. Are those times when you feel like you're being really slowed down, do you check your own speed and measure it versus what the speed limit is in that area?
Yes, I'm new to the area. I've lived here 5 years, and I've been cautioned about speed limits, and I now know where the signs are and where they change. It took me a while to learn. It took me a while to learn about the pedestrians on Sioux Boulevard in front of the campus. And it took me a while to learn, to use my turn signals as often as I should. And I am improved. So, I respect that. I really like the slowed downness. But I don't like the control of it, that we have to. I like the two-lane flow, mm-hmm. Two lanes in each direction. I do understand about the fifth lane, and that does work. But I think that would be too much. Not really enough room on the street for that, perhaps.
All right, let's get some responses. Julie, thanks for the call. Appreciate that. We could take additional calls from our listeners at 800-838-3760 or 541-552-6782 or by email jx@jeffnet.org. It's an interesting concept, though. She's okay with the slower traffic, but doesn't like the sense of control.
Yeah, that's I do appreciate that concern. Part of our goal was to, with the 85th percentile speed limit being 7 miles an hour over that speed limit, is trying to slow that traffic back down because it's much safer for pedestrian bikes and other vehicles. And so the speed limit, ironically, though, we didn't see a major reduction in the overall time it takes you to travel. And I think it would be helpful if Kim could kind of share those numbers with our listeners at this point so you can put that in perspective, because even though you may feel like you've slowed down and you can't pass people, you're still getting through the corridor essentially just as fast as you did before. So
yeah, let's hear those.
Right. Well, we've been tracking the travel time since January, and we've been driving it during the AM peak and the PM peak hour every month. And in the beginning, it took, I guess it was just under 4 minutes to travel through the corridor. Basically, it's a 2 mile section from Valley View to Hellman. Mm-hmm. And since January, we've been driving it, and we have seen no increase in time. Now, Kittleson expected that to go up 20 seconds approximately. But we haven't overall, we haven't seen any increase in travel time over that 2 mile stretch. Now, at one designated location where we've been tracking the 85th percentile speed, the speed has dropped from 32 before the road diet to 30 miles per hour after the road diet. So it has dropped, but not as much as we would have expected.
Mm-hmm. And that's actually almost like statistical noise, isn't it? Just dropping by 2 miles an hour. I mean, you could see that same fluctuation with or without the road diet, it seems like.
Exactly. And so what Mike's point is, that there's a perception that you're driving so much slower, but when you look at the data, it really doesn't show that.
So, all right, then you've had a negligible effect on speed or travel times, which are two of the criteria. Now, what about the effect on crashes? What are the numbers there?
Crashes. According to the crashes that are reported to the city of Ashland, there were 120 crashes along the corridor over a 10-year period, so about 12 per year on average. Since the road diet, we've had three crashes, and they've all been at Maple, and they've all been rear-end, and there's one turning movement, which was a strange crash. But
Maple Street is the turnoff to the hospital in Ashland for the people that know the town.
The main signalized intersection as you come in town. Another key location, the highest accident location, was actually at Hersey-Weimer prior to the road diet, and it was an offset intersection, and it had a lot of problems. There were 39 crashes there in a 10-year period, and to date we've had zero. So that's kind of a significant decrease as well.
All right. So are you factoring out, though, can you take out the crashes that were a result of that misalignment between Hersey and Weimer? And kind of figure out what your general trend would be?
You know, we haven't done that, but you probably could. You'd probably look at more of the angle-type crashes with that offset intersection that were there. And you would, if you take out the angle crashes, then... But there's a certain amount of angle crashes that you have, even if it's no longer offset, just because of the fact that you have no turn pocket. And you're turning across through lanes, and you're sometimes being sideswiped because you have blind spots.
Mike fought any coordination with the police department in terms of any changes in the way they've enforced any of the traffic laws along the road diet corridor in the nearly a year since it's been in place?
Yeah, I think initially, as Kim was saying, that transition period, a lot of folks were still making left turns at Van Ness, which is now a restricted left-hand turn as you come into town. And so they probably spent a good 3 months enforcing at that location. They tried to first just do verbal warnings and then ultimately end up issuing citations. But that was a short-term, I think, involvement there. I in talking with one of the police officers, they said they have more citations out there this last year. So I think they have focused some more time out there since the road diet. So.
Was there an original timeline that was shorter than the year that you've gotten to? Was it always going to be a one-year project?
We've always proposed to the city council a one-year pilot to give it time to go through a full cycle. The Kittleson report actually had recommended 2 years, but we decided to go with the one-year pilot paint. Let's see how it does. I do want to say, though, so that the council is going to make that decision on December the 3rd. But if they decide to convert it back, that won't happen until the spring, because certainly in the wintertime we can't restripe it. And so, and again, this is really going to be totally up to the city council at this point on the December 3rd meeting. So,
all right, let us take some more calls. We have Larry in Medford on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Mike Fought, the Ashland Public Works Director, and Kim Parducci from Southern Oregon Transportation Engineering. Larry, go ahead.
Oh, Larry. All right. Yeah, me. Hi there. I wanted to comment in favor of that restriping over there. I go into Ashland from Medford once a week or once every other week, and I find that it flows very well, and also it's more relaxing driving because you're not competing for lanes, and so I'm totally in favor of it.
All right. Thanks for that, Larry. Appreciate it. Kim Parducci, thoughts on that comment and whether you've heard similar ones?
Yeah, well, you know, I've heard both. I've heard people who struggle with finding gaps from the side streets to get out, and then I've heard people who say just that exact same thing, that it feels calmer and it feels less hectic, and they really enjoy that feel of the new roadway.
Does it depend largely on how much of a hurry you're in, do you think? I'll tell you something. I've noticed, based on my own time, that my sense of urgency changes based entirely on where I stand in relation to the clock.
Oh, I think you're exactly right. And I think that you do see a spike. I know when I drive it in the morning, doing my travel times, there's a spike about 5 minutes to 8 a.m. when all the commuter traffic's coming in. And you feel that hectic rush to get to work. And then it goes for about 8 minutes, and then it's over. And then it calms right back down.
It's a very short rush hour.
It is.
All right. Kim Parducci and Mike Fault will be standing by. We'll take a short break on the exchange and come back and take more of your calls and emails as we talk about the Ashland Road Diet coming up on its one-year anniversary with a city council decision pending in December. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with Kim and Mike and you in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today about road diets, the process of taking a four-lane road, two lanes in each direction, and turning it into essentially a two-lane road with a center turn lane that is shared. The road diet has been in place in Ashland for nearly a year, and the city is taking input on what people think of the road diet on North Main Street. City Council will make a decision in December. We have with us Mike Fault, the Public Works Director in Ashland, and Kim Parducci, who's the owner of Southern Oregon Transportation Engineering, helping pull in some statistics on how well the road diet has worked in its nearly a year. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760, anywhere around the region, in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Back to the point where we're just making, though, Kim, about the sense of urgency that people have based on their own schedule and the shortness of Ashland's rush hour, which is actually like 8 minutes from what you were saying. Particularly in the summertime, you can't get in too big a hurry in Ashland, because even if you're traveling from one end of town to the other and you make it through the road diet corridor as fast as you want, you still have to go through downtown with lots of pedestrian crosswalks and lots of tourists and out-of-towners and people just sort of drifting in and out of the roadway. So it probably pays not to get in too big a hurry driving through Ashland anyway.
I agree.
All right. We'll leave it at that. Let's take a call from Isabel in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Yes, I have two comments about the road diet. I think the realignment of the intersection between Hersey and Weimer was superb. That's a long time coming. And I see that, and in fact, when I have people come to see me, and I live on Hersey, I can now tell them that they can make that left turn safely. So I think that's great. The problem is, living on Hersey, there's a lot more traffic who's taking advantage of that intersection, and we already had traffic here before. Semi-trucks that deliver into downtown and all that, and it's only a two-lane street, and I have to cross the street to get my mail. I have to pull out of my driveway, and there's so much more traffic that even crossing the street to check my mail, which was already hazardous, is even more hazardous. And I'm wondering if it was taken into account how the road diet was going to affect traffic flow on other streets that aren't set up traffic-wise to accommodate that increased flow.
All right. Let's let Mike Fault get a crack at that one. Thanks for the call, Isabel.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to refer some of this in a second here to Kim. But so first of all, we have been tracking traffic on several of the surrounding streets just for that reason, so we can measure impact to the road diet, because there were some perceptions that people would take other routes. As far as Hersey Street goes, it's actually a collector road designed to take large truck traffic and pedestrians, so it's a high-volume road anyway. And what I want to do, and that notwithstanding, I still understand your concern, But I don't know if Kim has that data. We've been tracking the data with her here handy, but we've been tracking this data monthly now quarterly for a year. And maybe you could share with us what you've seen in terms of increased traffic on Hersey.
Right. Well, overall, side street traffic has increased about 10%. I don't know specifically at Hersey without going through all my notes to look at what the counts were specifically on Hersey. But I can say that I actually count Hersey, Weimer, North Main 5 times every month. So I'm pretty familiar with that intersection. And the volume on the approach, the Hersey approach, has virtually been unchanged since January in terms of total trips coming up to North Main Street during the peak hour. Now, when you get further down to the residential areas, it may increase from side streets all collectively adding to Hersey stretches. And I'm not sure exactly if that volume has increased because maybe people are taking different routes, you know, versus, you know, taking maybe Hellman or different streets over to Hersey. But at the intersection of North Main Street, we have not really seen any increases in traffic there.
We did get a call. She couldn't stay on the line because she was in a hurry. But Laura wanted to mention that it seems to her like it's more unsafe for her to turn left now. She lives right off of North Main Street, and turning left onto it can be a bit of an issue. And I can relate to this. I turn left off of Skidmore Street every afternoon coming back from lunch. And where you used to have perhaps shorter bunches because you had two lanes of traffic there, now you have to wait for that same bunch of traffic in one lane to get past you before you can make that left turn. And I imagine that's probably been the source of a lot of comments to you.
That is. Turning from the side streets is probably the biggest concern. That and congestion at signalized intersections.
Is there any particular remedies that can be added to the road diet? I mean, can it be tweaked now that it's in place and you had a chance to take it out for a spin for a year?
So a couple of things. And Kim, I'd like you to talk. Part of what Kim's been analyzing is what kind of gaps are available for those left-hand turn movements and whether or not their appropriate levels of gaps, and just making sure that data first. And then we come back to your final question. We do have some modifications that we are going to recommend to council if they decide to keep the road diet in place, and we can talk about those. But talk about the gap analysis you've done.
Well, we've been gathering gap data at Hersey-Weimer. That's the main intersection we've been focusing on. And I don't know if you want gap actual information.
When we talk about a gap, what are we talking about here?
So a gap is the size in seconds of an opening for a car to pull out into traffic, basically. It's the minimum time required. So to make a left turn off a side street, you need about 7 seconds. So when we look at gaps of adequate size, we look at gaps that are 7 seconds or larger, 7.5 seconds or larger for left turn movements, and 4 seconds, like 4.5 seconds for a right turn movement. And so we go out and we do counts and we log how many gaps of adequate size there are. And we've looked at that at Hersey-Weimer, and we still show there are sufficient gaps for any of the turn movements that are being made from the side streets.
Even at the busiest times of day?
Yeah, we do everything during our peak, during peak conditions. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's easy to get out on North Main Street. It just means there's adequate gaps during that peak hour. So I think the frustration is there used to be two lanes, so you didn't see all of the cars in one lane like you see now.
Well, that's what I was about to get to, is whether this is, in fact, at least partly psychological, that seeing what looks like a whole funeral procession of cars coming at you is a little more daunting than seeing a few scattered between two lanes.
I think that, and I also think that people were used to people driving a little faster, so they would be more hesitant to pull out. I watch people sit to make a right turn when they clearly could make a right turn several times and not do it, because I think they're thinking the oncoming car is driving faster than they actually are.
Now, are people using that center turn lane, which some people call the suicide lane, you're probably aware, in that manner? I mean, are they using it to make the left turns when they really don't have a clear gap on the lane they're eventually going to, but they do at least have a gap crossing the traffic coming at them?
They do. They do. They pull into the center lane and they wait for another gap. It's called a two-stage gap. They take the first, and then they wait, and then they take the second.
And that's completely legal?
Which again is part of the design of the road, is so you don't have to accelerate from one street and get up to speed. You can wait for the gap, come into a refuge, and wait until you have another gap and transfer into that, transition into that lane safely. So.
Let me catch up on a couple of other comments here. Julian Ashland, who we talked to earlier, called back, and one of the points she wanted to reemphasize was that in the case of a traffic emergency, it makes you break the law because you're going to have to use the center turn lane or the bike lane to get around it.
Well, again, first of all, let's talk about an emergency. If the police are responding, a fire responding emergency, all vehicles are required to pull off to the right. And there's our police and fire have analyzed this before we moved into the road diet pilot project. And there's plenty of room as long as people follow the law and move out of the way. If we have a project maintenance project, we're going to route people around through those bike lanes. If there's an emergency, they'll be coned around those, so it won't be an illegal maneuver. It'll be simply getting traffic around while we're dealing with the emergency.
All right. And then Andrew in Ashland wanted to say that he's a car driver, thinks it's definitely better, so much easier and safer, which must make you feel pretty good, Kim, about the comments you're collecting.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't really have an opinion one way or the other on the road diet itself. I'm just trying to collect the data and summarize so that the city can determine whether or not this is what they want to, you know, this is really the nature of how they want Ashland Street to operate as. I mean, do they want it to be calmer? Do they want it to be a multimodal, or do they want to go back to, you know, serving the vehicle as the number one priority? And that's kind of the question that has to be asked.
Mike Fott, I know that there was, you mentioned very early on in the program, the idea of actually widening. Mm-hmm. To be able to provide broader bike lanes and stuff like that. Now you're talking about munching up people's front lawns and all kinds of grinding and excavating and probably utility removal and all that sort of stuff. What was the difference in price tag between setting up the road diet versus the actual widening?
Well, we actually did not even take it any further than, because there are also some historic areas there. You couldn't widen it easily. And so what we looked, I think as we looked at that option, we really thought that's really not Ashland. That's not something we want to see a five-lane configuration come into downtown Ashland. So we didn't even price that option out.
All right. We have a couple of more comments here from email. Deb in Talent writes, it's too bad that some automobile drivers think that they have a right to the roads and that bicyclers don't have any. And maybe people who think road rules are controlling would like traffic signals, signs, speed limits should be done away with also. Good grief, it's time for a reality check. From Deb and Talent. Adam writes, I appreciate the spaciousness of the new configuration. I didn't realize how crowded it felt to jam two lanes into that stretch of road. It feels more in keeping with the tone of Ashland, or more about quality of life than efficiency. And then Polly writes, regarding the road diet show going on now, one of the guests said you did not have to leave your name when commenting on Open City Hall. That is not true. I just completed the survey, and it made me check a box to post my name with my comments. There was no way to opt out. Well, I didn't see the names when I was on there yesterday, so Mike can explain.
Actually, and I appreciate that comment, and I should have said something when that came up. But the council recently, at a recent council meeting, decided that they did not want to allow people to give anonymous feedback, and so that was just changed last week because they felt it was important that people that do submit comment for the public record should demonstrate who they are.
So it was changed to include the names? So,
yeah, the names now are required, yeah.
So. Okay, all right. So I was looking at some of the earlier comments that came without them. Okay, well, you start from 233 as of yesterday. Is that a good number? Is that about what you're looking for?
Well, again, this is not a scientifically significant survey. This is really trying to get feedback, and we're doing a scientifically significant survey with SOU as a follow-up. But what we've really endeavored to do is get feedback all along. And that leads to some of the recommendations we're going to make to council. Left turns at Bush Street, for example, when people are making left-hand turns, there's some confusion there. And Kim's come up with some potential design that would allow a left-hand turn that we'd look at. We have some issues at Maple Street for people turning into the medical facilities. We have a design there to fix that. Certainly we'd implement. And there are a couple other locations where Kim's been working with citizens that we would also recommend some modifications. So, from that standpoint, if we keep it, this involvement and engagement has been really positive for us. So.
Rachel in Talent writes, I just want to second what Larry said about the road diet. It is much more relaxing and flows much more smoothly. I live in Talent and drive to Ashland at least 4 or 5 days a week. Before the road diet, that stretch of North Main was stressful and tense with lots of lane changes to avoid cars turning left onto side streets. Now, as a driver, you can just go with the flow and drive. There isn't anything else to worry about. Just follow the car in front of you. So much better than before. And then Tim in Eureka writes, I spent almost 10 years in Davis, California, and nearly 20 years in Eureka. Access to less expensive transportation, better gas mileage for slower car speeds and riding a bike, should free up personal economic resources to spend in other places. An increase in public safety has an obvious positive economic impact, but I wonder about measuring the impact on personal resource. Great topic. Anything about that measurement, Mike?
No, and clearly I agree with the caller. We're not measuring that side of that, so.
All right. Are there any particular surprises in either the way the road diet has functioned or the reaction to it? Kim?
Well, actually, you know, one surprise to me is that the speed hasn't lowered more than it has. I really did expect maybe vehicles to drive a little slower, but they're just not. They're driving pretty close to the speed they did before.
And Mike Flott, how long will the open City Hall site stay open for comments?
Yeah, we're going to talk about that here in the next couple of days, but we envision closing that up mid-October. So,
all right. We're going to close a little early today because we need to get an FCC-required announcement in, but I want to thank our guests for joining us today to talk about the road diet, and I want to thank our listeners for joining us. Mike Flott is the Ashland Public Works Director, and Kim Parducci owns Southern Oregon Transportation Engineering, helping compile the comments on the road diet and get some numbers in there as well. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on the Exchange at 8 o'clock, we'll talk about the Artist-in-Residence program at Crater Lake and who the new artist is. Our Vents Day segment, we'll get into the shutdown effects and insurance signups. And then we'll talk about, at 9 o'clock, will the author of the book, Let It Shine, Solar Energy Through History. That is all tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange. If you're listening in the morning, the takeaway is coming up next. If you're listening to our evening rebroadcast, it will be followed by news from the BBC. Charlotte Dern's our producer, also manning the controls today at the board. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Please join us again tomorrow at 8 for another edition of the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. And have a great day.